From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today we look at Central and South America with our reporter in Esteli, Nicaragua, Stephen Sefton, and we're going to discuss the recent Shanghai Cooperation Organization and CELAC meetings. Stephen, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us, as always.
Thanks for inviting me again, Don. Unless we haven't spoken for a couple of weeks now, and although other things have been happening in the region since the CELAC summit, which took place on September the 19th, I think it was, that event was so important that and had so many significant aspects to it that I think it's worthwhile spending some time having a look at that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the SCO also. And also during that same time frame, by the way, we had the general debate at the UN General Assembly here in New York, and some very interesting conversations from the podium and, by way of Memorex at that as well. So go ahead. Let's start with CELAC, if that's your choice. Yeah.
Yeah, so in the CELAC summit, for people who aren't familiar with CELAC, the CELAC is the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. And it was originally founded back in, I think it was 2011, 2012, very much at the driven by Fidel Castro and, in particular, Comandante Hugo Chavez, the president of the very much lamented president of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. What they tried to do was to set up a regional organization, essentially to replace the Organization of American States, for the simple reason that the Organization of American States is essentially a puppet organization of the United States and its neighbor, Canada, to try and impose their agenda on the region. And CELAC is an attempt by governments in the region to counteract the undue influence of the United States and Canada in their affairs. Now, although CELAC was originally set up very much at the instigation of Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro, at the time, they had a lot of support from even right-wing governments, for example, Mexico's Felipe Calderón. Which, in the context of the time, shouldn't really be a surprise, because in the context of the time, there was actually a predominance in the region of various flavors of left-wing and progressive and revolutionary governments, and so and the impetus of CELAC is regional integration. Regional integration independent of the United States. So it made sense for the right-wing presidents at the time, including center-right people that I regard as center-right politicians like Michelle Bachelet of Chile at the time, to take part in CELAC, because CELAC was going to be a forum that, unlike the Organization of American States, was going to be able to negotiate as a body with, for example, the European Union or the People's Republic of China or Russia and its association of Eurasian states that was developing at the time. So it made a lot of sense for right-wing governments, even though they may have been very much ideologically opposed to, of course, to Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez. It made sense for them to participate in the CELAC because it potentially opened up very important opportunities that they did not have under the format of the Organization of American States.
Right.
So then they held a summit, and as you might expect, the summit reflected very much the confusing, what I find, and I'm sure many people find, the confusing configuration of power and influence that takes place in this constant tug of war that some people foolishly talk about, pink tide and conservative restoration. And what we're seeing is just the latest phase of the enduring struggle ever since the Spanish conquest,
right.
Of people in the region determined to secure their emancipation, their independence, their sovereignty, their autonomy against the influence of outside imperialist powers.
Right.
Under current circumstances, obviously, we're talking about the United States principally, but also the European Union, the traditional colonial powers there, continue to try and exert their baneful influence, in particular Spain, for example, on the development of events in the region, in Latin America and the Caribbean.
Britain as well, as we saw with Argentina, for example, in the fight over, you know, what they called the Falkland Islands.
Right. Thank you, Don. Thank you for reminding me about that, because actually I think that figured in the final declaration of the summit, whereby the countries of the region again affirmed their support for Argentina's legitimate claim to sovereignty over the Malvinas Islands, as you point out, the British call them the Falkland Islands. What are they, something like 7,000 miles away from the UK?
Yeah, and like, you know, you can pee standing on the mainland from Argentina and hit the shore of the Malvinas. So, yeah, I just want to, for the audience's benefit, just point out that, you know, this unpacking of the relationship with the imperialist powers of you know, what they call Latin America, but it's not all Latin, by the way. They speak Dutch there too, for example, and a whole lot of languages that were spoken there before the 15th century. Some of those are still around, and they were the prevailing languages for a millennia, whatever, as they developed. But unpacking involves the economic damage that's been done primarily, and the things that follow, political, cultural, social. When you look at the way imperialism has blocked the development of these countries on the one hand for its own purposes, and then where development took place, where it was segmented and, you know, put together basically as little appendages to the imperial machine, so you can only mine copper over in this country here. You can't build automobiles, and you can only do fisheries over here, and you can't build anything. And so, you know, they had these specializations for each economy that didn't really support the people at all in the countries, and didn't support the region as a whole either, other than as appendage to a machine that was basically sucking the wealth out of them. So undoing that requires, you know, somebody that you can trade with on the outside and use as a trading partner as you develop your economy to serve your people. And that's kind of the process that we're beginning to see develop now. This is one of the first instruments of it, CELAC.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about this particular CELAC summit, and perhaps we should explain that CELAC has been somewhat dormant from about 2014-2015 onwards, in particular since the much lamented death of President Hugo Chavez in 2013, but more particularly after the rise of right-wing governments, the overthrow of President Dilma Rousseff in an illegitimate so-called soft coup in Brazil in 2016, the election of Mauricio Macri's extreme right-wing government in Argentina, the victory of Sebastián Piñera in Chile's taking over from Michelle Bachelet, and so between from about 2015 until recently, in particular the election of Alberto Fernández in Argentina recently. And also in recent years, the coming to power of Andrés Manuel López Obrador in Mexico, these two social democrat presidents have served to counteract and roll back to some extent the malign influence of the right-wing governments of Sebastián Piñera, Mauricio Macri, and Jair Bolsonaro, who ultimately took over in Brazil after the judicial coup against eliminating Lula da Silva as a candidate for the elections in whenever it was, 2018, I think. So this current configuration of SELAC is, in a sense, a revival of it. And that's why people reading about it will find articles talking about it as if it's something that's quite recent, and something that's only recently come about. But in fact, what's happened is that after being in abeyance for several years, what this summit has done has revived something that was already an extremely important component of the regional scene in Latin America and the Caribbean, in particular in relation to the issue of regional integration. So this recent summit took place in the context that we've been talking about. And as I said, like many people, I find it very confusing trying to keep track and put together and see patterns in events that have taken place over the last year or so, the last 2 years. But one of the things that's absolutely clear is that CELAC is going to go forward because the region as a whole, regardless of the political orientation of the governments of the different countries, they must trade with China.
Yep.
And China is now, and has been for some years, I think, Brazil's biggest trading partner, having supplanted the United States several years ago.
Right.
And I think it's also a major trading partner for Mexico. And that was reflected, that reality of the importance of China as a trading partner, as an economic partner, as a finance partner, even as a strategic ally in the case of Cuba and Venezuela. That was reinforced by the fact that there was only one international leader from outside the region who addressed the summit. Yeah. And that leader was President Xi Jinping of the People's Republic of China.
Yeah.
So that gives you that from the United States point of view, they must have been absolutely furious at that. But that unfortunately for the United States, that is the reality. And the United States is desperately trying to put together some kind of foreign policy. Who was it that called? Somebody recently said absolutely clearly, I think it was Alexander Mercouris in one of his video expositions. I think he was talking about the recent AUKUS debacle this outrageous diplomatic failure by the United States trying to set up Australia with nuclear submarines to threaten China, but in the process radically alienating its long-standing ally France. And in his exposition on that issue, Alexander Mercouris very appositely noted that the foreign policy establishment in the United States, and I think I'm quoting him textually, are incompetent and amateur. And that was the phrase he used. And you can see that in Latin America.
Yeah.
And they're like a one-trick pony, the United States. And they do what we want or else.
Do what I'm telling you. It's like, yes, that. Like Roderick Crawford in that old movie with, I forgot her name, Halliday, Judy Halliday.
Right.
Gangster guy.
Yeah, and that fact was noted in quite a direct way in the final declaration, where the declaration condemns the imposition of unilateral, illegal, coercive economic measures that people in the United States usually call sanctions.
Right.
But there's only one body on the international scene that can legally apply sanctions, and that's the United Nations Security Council.
Yep.
So the fact that in this CELAC declaration you have these various things addressed to the CELAC summit, the CELAC summit participants by President Xi Jinping, the declaration in support of Argentina, the declaration also in support of Cuba, unless I'm mistaken. And the condemnation of these illegal coercive measures by the United States and also its European allies.
Right.
So that is very positive. And that reflects that there is a developing dynamic whereby the initial impulse towards regional integration, the initial vision of regional integration, held by Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez, is very much alive, but it's not without obstacles. So, for example,
and contradictions.
Obstacles and contradictions, yeah, very much sure, so. Yeah. So for example, the country that is often described and with very, very, very rightly, in my opinion, as the U.S. equivalent of Israel in Latin America, Colombia. Colombia did not take part in the summit because it objected to the presence of President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela.
Right.
Colombia still maintains the ridiculous position
of
recognizing Juan Guaido, and even Spain has now, in effect, dropped its recognition of Guaido because it recently made an invitation to the Venezuelan government to participate in one of their very important cultural events, Ibero-American cultural events, and by making that invitation, in effect, they de-recognize Juan Guaido.
Right.
So even Colombia is even going against the trend in among its allies in the European Union. Anyway, Colombia didn't take part. Brazil did not take part because Jair Bolsonaro took Brazil out of CELAC last year.
Yep, we know.
So obviously you have two very important countries, Brazil, the biggest economy in the region, not taking part in this very important summit. And that points to what you just pointed out, that there are these strong contradictions in the way the different countries in the region view. Sorry, there's a vehicle going by.
Sorry, I hear it. Go ahead.
There are very strong contradictions in the region, the way the different countries view what the role of CELAC should be. But I think even though they're going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming into it, Colombia and Brazil cannot really afford to stay out of CELAC. And Colombia, the fact that Colombia hasn't actually left CELAC, but it just decided not to participate in the summit, is an indication of that. Because if it could afford to, it would have left CELAC the same way that Brazil did last year.
Yeah.
But it didn't. And the reason it didn't is because even the right-wing governments in the region, for example, the government of La Calle Pou
Uruguay,
in Uruguay, and even the Ecuadorian government of Lasso, who's an extreme right-winger, they participated in the summit, even though, in theory, they don't recognize President Nicolas Maduro as a legitimate president of Venezuela. So what does that indicate? That indicates that even for right-wing governments who might otherwise, under different circumstances, just walk away, they recognize that there's no other show in town that's going to enable them to maximize their trade potential and their economic potential and give them all kinds of options that they would not otherwise have, except CELAC. They've got to participate in CELAC.
Yeah, I mean, this is brainchild. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Yep.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's right. So, you know, this brainchild of Chavez and Castro, in essence, is basically founded on an acknowledgement of the absolute necessity economically and politically for the region to find its its own levers of power, its own, control over itself, its control over its own destiny, to allow the economic activity that should be occurring there and, across borders, within the region, and region as a whole, individually, to actually be expressed. And you're seeing the political configuration. You could have predicted back in June who was going to attend this CELAC conference and who wasn't. When the only two countries to vote, well, you had the annual vote on sanctions in Cuba, which you were discussing sanctions. That's the annual vote at the United Nations in the General Assembly on sanctions. This year, there were two that voted against. That was Israel and the United States, not even Palau or the Marshall Islands, which is normally what happens. And then three abstentions, two of them in Latin America, Brazil and Colombia, and then the Nazi regime in Ukraine that was installed by Barack Obama and that whole crew. So they're the only ones that are opposed to lifting sanctions against Cuba. The rest of the world votes affirmatively condemning the sanctions by the United States. This shows, because this is framing what you're talking about, too. The political gravity recognizes that these sanctions are indefensible, basically. And so where you make a public statement from your national government, they all chime in, with the exception of these outlaw countries or outlaw governments. Somewhere in there, there's going to be constituent pressure to follow that. And the United States is not going to be able to use sanctions, because if no one honors them, because no one is allowed to trade with Cuba right now, except for exceptions granted by the State Department. And if people begin to disregard that, you could have a vote in the General Assembly for those members who are sanctioned by the U.S. to sanction the U.S. And suddenly you have, if the U.S. sanctioned everybody out of doing business with the U.S., they would end up standing alone and having to trade with themselves. And this is a lever.
Yeah, Don, I think you're right. And I think the Select Summit is a sign of something that we've been joking about or being half serious about for a long time.
Yeah.
That the United States is becoming more and more isolated.
Yep.
Now, I think it would be a mistake to frame the exchanges in the CELAC summit and the final outcome as simply some kind of tug of war between supporters of the United States, outright supporters of the United States, and the revolutionary governments of Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela, Bolivia, and now another progressive government in Peru. They just made a very important announcement about making sure that the impoverished majority in Peru will benefit from the country's natural gas, which has thrown the right wing in Peru into a fit of rage. So you have these very progressive governments, and you have these extreme right wing governments. But also in the middle, you have the contradictions generated by the social democrats.
Yeah.
People like Alberto Fernandez in Argentina and the host of the CELAC summit himself, Andrés Manuel López Obrador. Now, in his opening speech, Andrés Manuel López Obrador made some really strange remarks that can only be explained by the fact that he has this kind of social democrat vision that if only you're nice enough, you'll be able to get your enemy to change. And it's just absurd. But he made the suggestion that his vision of the future was that the CELAC would enter into a trade arrangement with the United States and Canada, because, of course, Mexico has just come out of a renegotiation process of the original North American Free Trade Agreement that is now called the Agreement US-Mexico-Canada. I've forgotten what the acronym is that they use, but that renegotiation happened under Donald Trump.
Right.
And so Mexico has kind of got at least one foot, and perhaps more than one foot, in the what used to be the North American Free Trade Agreement. And so it makes sense from his point of view to make this suggestion that the regional integration should not just be Latin America and the Caribbean, but actually all of the Americas, from Alaska all the way down to Tierra del Fuego. And that, of course, goes practically entirely against the original vision and the essential vision. And in fact, the vision that's actually expressed in this final declaration from the summit, for a very simple reason, that the United States and Canada are not going to abandon savage capitalism. What who is it? Pope John Paul I, I think it was, described capitalism as savage capitalism, and they're just not going to abandon their capitalist ethos. They're just not. They're always going. The United States, Canada, they're always going to give priority to their corporate elites.
That was Pope Francis, by the way. Pope Francis. I just looked it up.
Okay. Yeah. So, whereas in the final declaration, if you look at its final paragraph, that they talk absolutely clearly about prioritizing development processes focused on the needs of the human person, which is diametrically the opposite of everything that we understand by capitalism. So, and for López Obrador to kind of issue this kind of welcoming vision to the participants of the summit, essentially saying, well, let's let bygones be bygones and get into bed with the United States and Canada, and is just absolutely insane. I mean, from the point of view of people who have followed the development of CELAC from its origins, under the impetus of Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez. Mm-hmm. So, and what does that mean? I mean, that signals that, and one of the things that happened during the summit was that Nicaragua made a really outspoken condemnation of a remarks by the Argentinian government, saying that, in fact, this is worth explaining. The Argentinian government some weeks ago issued a public statement saying that they were working with the United States to solve the problem of Nicaragua.
Really?
Now, oh, yes. And so Nicaragua, quite rightly, was absolutely furious about that scandalously interventionist remark, and this kind of total collaboration by apparent collaboration by Argentine foreign policy with U.S. imperialist intervention in Nicaragua.
Can I ask and you so, who was at CELAC for Nicaragua? Because I know the foreign minister was in New York this past week, but was it the foreign minister?
And I think it was Dennis Moncada Colinas.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because he was in New York like a few days ago, I think. So,
yeah, yeah, and I think Dennis Moncada also gave Nicaragua's address to the 76th General Assembly, currently underway. But so what they said in this CELAC summit, Nicaragua outspokenly condemned Argentina's interventionist collaboration with the United States against the interests of Nicaragua, and said very clearly that they would not vote for Argentina to assume the next temporary presidency, the pro tempore presidency of CELAC.
Right.
And that, and, you know, and that's in diplomatic terms, and I'm sure you understand yourself very well, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. And that's a very, very, very outspoken condemnation.
Yeah, it's a public dressing down, but in diplomatic terms. And we're out of time, so we have to end here. But I'd like to continue this next week and also get to the SCO, even though it'll be maybe 2 weeks after SCO, because there's some very, very common threads here that we really need to explore. So thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, I hope you'll be able to discuss that with people like Mark Sloboda and other contributors.
Yeah, we definitely will. But I definitely want to hash it out with you. All right, thank you so much, and I'll speak with you again next week.
Okay, thanks a million, Don. Take care now.
And you do the same.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.